listening to the Drawing the Ideal Self podcast for February 2022. Today's podcast is an interview with Ian Gilman-Smith, who is both a psychotherapist and a social worker. And I do know that some of the audience are social workers and may be wondering about how you can use more PCP in your work. So you might find this episode very interesting. Hi Ian, in terms of what you do, can you tell us a bit about your career and how you've got to this point?
Yeah, I mean, lots to say, I suppose, really. But I started life probably over 30 years ago. I try not to sort of count the years. And I trained up as a social worker. And I found myself drawn to specialising in mental health right from the start in terms of, wow, of training. And I think what attracted me the most actually was the sense that in terms of mental health, there is no one explanation as to why someone is presenting in a particular way or experiencing mental distress. So obviously there's the medical biological model of mental illness, but obviously there's the psychological and the social model as well. And so social work was very much tapping into the social and the psychological aspects. And so my training, and I'd like to think the training still exists in this sort of way, was very much sort of psychological as well, yeah, in terms of sort of thinking about mental distress.
Okay.
And so actually we had some talks from individuals in mental health services who were part of the crisis service or a crisis, psychiatric crisis service.
Yeah.
And I found that really interesting because the whole idea of crisis theory is that you're mobilizing that individual and their family within the crisis to use that as an experiential and learning sort of perspective to try and find their own resources in addition to professional resources and family resources to find their way out of that crisis. And I was really sort of taken with that. And it's almost so long ago, I almost can't quite remember, but I know we had information or lectures about Kelly Yeah, this is at the London School of Economics and Personal Construct Psychology. And that really took my interest too. So cutting out all the other sort of career bits and pieces I did after that, I found myself fairly soon after qualifying as part of the Barnett Crisis Intervention Service as a social worker. And that's where you'd be on call, including out of hours, and you'd go out with a psychiatric nurse and a psychiatrist. And you'd assess the individual, often in their own home, often with family, and you'd provide a crisis intervention service to them. So that could be sort of rapid follow-up and support. It could be one individual on that team, or it could be a number of you that would support the individual. And I suppose I was just very attracted to crisis intervention. I was really quite pleased to get a job within the intervention services. And I suppose it all came together because also the social work department was literally across the corridor from the psychology department where David Winter worked. And so in the social work department, I knew about PCP, and I came to understand obviously that David was the eminent person in PCP. And he gave a number of talks to interested others about, it was about actually suicide prevention, but PCP. And that's where I got introduced to the training in PCP. And so actually I was in a very fortunate position, which I sadly just does not exist now, where as a social worker, I could practice clinically in terms of the crisis follow-up. And I was being supervised by David across from the corridor. And attending the training course. And so even in terms of the clinical hours and material, that was within my work. So I was very fortunate, really. And I guess it was just a sense of a number of things coming together that allowed me to do that.
So you were working in that team. And what was your role in there?
So, I mean, as part of the role was multifaceted, actually. I was an approved social worker, which is what's called an approved mental health practitioner, ANAMP. So we would have the power to bring people into hospital and to make the application for someone to be detained formally in hospital. And that's been a thread throughout my career, actually, which I'll come back to. So there's that part, but actually it was trying to, I mean, you're always trying to look at the least restrictive practice, even in terms of being an approved social worker or approved mental health practitioner. You're trying to find an alternative to that restrictive hospital admission. And so crisis intervention really sort of was in line with that. And I was in that really fortunate position where I could work with people over an extended period of time, even up to a year, in terms of, I suppose, providing certainly supportive psychotherapy, but in the context of a multidisciplinary team. Looking back as a social worker, that was a real gift, because I know it's not quite so easy now in terms of that. So I could have that statutory role, but also that psychotherapeutic role as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yes. Very interesting. And I bet there's lots of people now who'd like that job.
Well, yes. But although I must say there's a bit of a conflict in myself, because I think it definitely has to exist. It's really important the Mental Health Act is there, and it's about maintaining people's health and safety and the protection of others. But I really struggled with that sort of dissonance, really, about, you know, how that fitted with a credulous approach and thinking from with sociality, thinking from an individual's perspective. Because actually, as an approved mental health practitioner, you've got to think about the wider context in terms of that person's position in the wider society and the impacts it's having on that wider society as well, not just the individual. And I felt rather uncomfortable with that over time. And so I found myself going much more to work towards the psychotherapy side. And I was fortunate enough to start working with the psychology department, actually, as a group therapist using PCP. And that was working with people with borderline personality disorder. And that was just over 20 years ago I started doing that.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting too.
Yeah, yeah. And go on.
Were you doing that? Who did you do it with in terms of facilitating?
Yeah, so there's someone else called Sue Watson, who's been very much in the PCP circle for some time. And so Sue and I did it for a couple of years as joint therapists, and that was supervised by the psychology department as well. It was part of a contrast in terms of a personal construct approach to working with people who have a psychiatric diagnosis of borderline personality disorder, compared to the dialectical behavioral therapy approach, DBT approach. And it was contrasting those two approaches.
Okay, that's interesting. So in terms of you in that role, you moved from it. What did you do next?
Yes. So about 20 years ago is when I qualified as a psychotherapist. And so I did a number of things. So I started to work as a psychotherapist within the psychology department. And that developed over time, where I became the manager, or one of the managers of psychological therapy services, which was about how therapy provision was offered to people with severe and enduring mental health difficulties. I was in that position for 10 years, and I did that part time. And I've always been a registered social worker, so I carried on. Actually, I stopped being a local authority social worker again around the same time. But I started working as an independent social worker. I ended up spending a lot of time in mental health review tribunals, where the tribunal panel is making a decision about whether someone should continue to be detained or not. And I started to get instructions all over the country in terms of assessing people. And I would then provide a report and often go to the tribunal hearings as well. So I carried on sort of part-time as that independent social worker, and then I think it was 3.5 days a week in psychological therapy services, really developing all the therapies, including evidence-based sort of therapies as well, but also PCP being part of that in terms of both group work and individual work. So I was managing the waiting lists and initial assessments, but also providing therapy as well during that time.
Yeah. Oh, interesting role.
Yeah. No, it was. I mean, it was. I mean, all work is hard, but it was hard just in terms of sort of having those two roles. So half the week I'm working as an independent social worker and providing sort of, and so working as an expert witness, really, and providing professional opinion. And then the other half working within the NHS and managing psychological therapies. But it was a great time and a really important time. And I suppose what's important to say is that PCP would run through all of that. So even my work as an independent social worker, which I still do now, it's absolutely fundamental to my assessments with individuals who are obviously experiencing some form of mental distress. And I suppose capturing their narrative, but also capturing the narratives of the multidisciplinary teams, the families, and that real sense that there is no one way of construing that individual's circumstances. And there are so many different perspectives. And then as the independent professional, I'm yet another sort of narrative within those narratives. And it's trying to be, I suppose, slightly humble with that in terms of being able to consider all the different sort of perspectives and using that idea of the credulous approach to assimilate that, but also being very aware that at some point I stop being credulous and I put my own view into the pot as well, which can have quite an impact. And I suppose it's being aware and sensitive of that power.
It could be quite scary, can't it, when you're involved in those kind of things. I'm involved in, making some diagnosis of autism.
Are you really? Yeah.
When I first started doing that, I was terrified. You're saying, this is what I think it is, and it's in people's records. Absolutely. So even if someone else changes their mind later, someone who hasn't got the full record may not see that that's been changed. It's a huge responsibility.
No, it really is. I do a lot of work in the Court of Protection now. That's where individuals who've got a learning disability or an acquired brain injury, or for example, dementia, are considered to lack mental capacity. And then the court needs to make a best interest decision, similar to the Children's Act, about, for example, where they should live, what care and treatment they should have, who they should have contact with. So in terms of, for example, even sexual relationships, it's not a best interest decision, but assessing people's capacity around that as well. And PCP is so much for me at the heart of that. I suppose, again, like I was saying before, it's just being able to understand and construe and prejudice with all those different narratives and all the different. I never get involved unless there's real dispute between all the parties. And so there's always that sense of friction, and it's about not taking a side as such, but trying to be credulous enough to see all of those perspectives, but also being aware that at some point you're also making your own impact, because you're being cross-examined in the witness box, and you're probably influencing the course of and the flow of the proceedings and the decisions that the judge ultimately makes. I find it fascinating from so many perspectives, but from a theoretical point of view, obviously there's the PCP and the social constructivist point of view, where actually you're there to construe the construction processes of another. But in this setting of being in the witness box, where I'm the expert, I'm called the expert witness, I just find that a really interesting concept in terms of how that fits with a PCP approach. Mm. Because can you have an expert in terms of PCP? I've come to the conclusion that in one sense you have, but you can do, but it's always being able to change your views based on the information, based on the evidence, and not presenting that information with a sense of ego or sense of threat to your own profession, but really trying to sort of cut through all of that to give to articulate how you construe that person's circumstances and considering the range of convenience in terms of what you're being asked to do.
So do the judges ask you anything about PCP?
So I'm very clear with all my reports that I do. I mean, I can't get away from it. I have to formulate. I have to make a very clear formulation. I can say this, I think, because I am one, but I think social workers don't do it very well in terms of formulations. Their psychology colleagues do. Obviously, the psychiatry will formulate. But social work really could do better, I think, with formulating, because it's about being able to, I think, even in therapy, the client should be able to stop you at any point and say, why are you asking those questions? Why are we going down that particular pathway? And I'm a very, very firm believer that the clinician should be able to account for themselves at any point. And I think the court is almost a metaphorical place where that's exactly what's being done.
Right.
It's like, why are you making that decision? Why are you suggesting that this person, for example, should not live in the family home? And you're suggesting that therefore their human rights should be challenged. Well, actually, if you're going to suggest that, you've got to be able to sort of say why you're doing that and be able to account for yourself. And so there's that formulation, but I suppose there's the PCP formulation, which for me just meshes in with all of the other parts of that formulation so I can work out how I've got to that point of why I'm making the decisions I am or expressing the views that I am. And that's very much underpinned by a constructivist framework always. And I can never escape it now. Not that I try to, but it's always there. I mean, I used to be petrified of going into the witness box. I would do anything to avoid it.
Yeah.
And after some amazing, it wasn't PCP training, but some amazing training around being an expert witness, I use PCP even just in terms of sitting in the witness box and even approaching the witness box physically and how you sit in it. And it's almost that sense of how you position yourself, how you're engaging with the judge who's a decision maker, and realizing that actually you're there to assist them to make a decision, and being very aware that everyone else has their roles. So the barristers, so sometimes you can be cross-examined by five barristers if there's five different parties. That can be really intimidating. But I guess, once again, it's trying to think, well, actually, that's their job. They're the advocates for their particular clients within this case. But I'm trying to assist the court make a best interest decision for the person who doesn't have a voice because they've been considered to lack capacity. And I suppose PCP just allows me to almost step back that little bit more to have a bit more of an objective view on things, rather than being caught up as if I'm up for examination, where on one level you are, but on the other hand, you're not at all. You're there as almost an instrument of the court to assist a whole process. And I guess it's about being objective to see that. And PCP allows me that sort of a bit of more of a distance to be able to perceive that. I've been very lucky in my career. So I've been a visiting lecturer at University of Hertfordshire for some time. And I do a session which is joined up with the law department because they have a mock court at the university. It's a proper court. It's all set out physically as a court, and so the law students come to cross-examine the clinical psychology trainees. It's my favourite day of the year. As far as I'm concerned, it's all PCP, and I come from it from a therapeutic or psychotherapeutic perspective. And so I suppose it's a bit. I can say it's a bit naughty, really, but I ask the universities to tell all the declin psych students to dress appropriately for court. And I say no more than that. And then we start the day by saying, well, how did you feel being asked to dress appropriately for court? And then all the construing comes out. Well, I don't want to be told what to do. Or it's this English court system is so stuffy and it's so power driven. And yes to all of that. But it's just I suppose that process of going through court, it just engages people so much. And then we have this sort of, it's just role play, but in a very formal court setting. And I have this discussion when, it's far better to experience what it might feel like now rather than in the real situation where you're confronted with all of these things that you're confronted with now. And it's such a good experiential learning day, but has that formality of court. And I suppose even the various acts that people have to work within, the Care Act, the Mental Capacity Act, Mental Health Act, et cetera.
Yeah, that's a much better way to do that learning, because it makes sense, doesn't it?
No, it really does make sense. And everyone will have a go at being a witness, a judge, a barrister. We'll change everyone's roles around. And they'll have cases where actually there is no one obvious clear outcome or answer, which is so much the case in mental health and mental distress. It makes for a fascinating day.
Oh, that's very exciting. I think I'd like to go and watch.
I could do so much more of that training. It's just really good fun.
Yeah,
I think.
it would be useful to have that, you know, available within, well, I work in a trust that's specifically mostly about mental health, and it would be great for our clinicians to have that experience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do, I mean, I see a lot of clinicians in the witness box, and they do struggle terribly because they're so, it's just overwhelming, and there's so much they're trying to construe. And there's definitely, I guess, using a PCP framework, but knowing where your lines of accountability are, is that there's definitely a way to sort of tread through that and be very aware of yourself. And I think also in the witness stand, it's that sense that, I don't know, is this PCP, but it's about it's owning your narrative and to be able to demonstrate. Well, actually, no, I think it is PCP because one would do the same in therapy, that you create co-create a formulation with the client, I think, and it's from there that you then plot the course of therapy and the experiments that come out of therapy. And I actually don't see my role as an independent social worker as being any different to that. It's that the forum and the range of convenience is slightly different, but other than that, it's the same thing really for me.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so you're using PCP all of the time in your day-to-day work?
I would say so. So for now I only realized about a month ago I have a portfolio career, which is, it all sounds very grand, but I didn't even know it was called that. So now I do I recently just got appointed onto to the Mental Health Tribunal. There's three members, so you have a psychiatrist, a judge, and what's called a specialist lay member who's got experience in mental health. So I'm now a specialist lay member. Yeah. So the three of us equally have the power invested to make a decision whether someone should continue to be detained or whether they should be discharged.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating because before I used to be on the other side of the table in a sense of giving evidence as an outside independent expert.
Yeah.
So that's one part of what I do. I provide supervision for psychotherapists. Yeah. I also provide supervision for social workers and also mental health practitioners in universities as well. That's really interesting.
Okay.
I'm also a psychotherapist, and I'll see people individually. I see couples as well.
Yeah.
And then all the independent social work that I was talking about, and the visiting lecturing as well.
Yeah, big portfolio.
Yeah, it's a fat one. but I really like it, and I must say it sounds great, and it is, but it's really hard because I mean, in the sense of I don't know what I'm doing from week to week, and I find it really hard to locate where I am. And I suppose actually what runs through all of that is PCP, and that's the thing that grounds me every time. Otherwise, I actually wouldn't know whether I was coming or going. I don't.
Right.
And there's something about that theoretical position that framework that always sort of gives me that sense of structure that I definitely need, because if I didn't have that, I think it would just be everything would be just feel too diffuse really, and I'd struggle.
I mean, I would agree with that absolutely, but it gives you a kind of thread that goes through your whole week that
absolutely.
You know that whatever you'll be doing, you'll be using that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's got to that point now where it's just quite comforting, really. It's not. I don't have to sit there and think, "Oh, PCP, what would that be?" It just is there.
Yes.
In terms of a background, a framework, which I can then sort of almost. I was going to say unconsciously, but that's probably not a very good, great PCP term. But I can almost unconsciously tap into that.
Yeah.
And it gives me that sense of place, really.
Yeah. Are there particular things that you find useful to use or to think with?
I've thought long and hard about this actually over the years. And I've got to that point where I don't think, I mean, laddering and the ABC technique and grids, all really good stuff. But I'm very clear in my thinking, and I can only own, I can't say for anyone else, those are just tools for PCP. And for me, where I always sort of go back to, and even when lecturing in terms of psychotherapy skills at uni, it's about that whole notion of constructive alternativism. And it's that sense that there is a reality out there, but actually we only make approximations to it based on our own construing and our own experiences, and that's what we've got to work with. And actually, I think that's the most important part for me. So, I mean, years ago, I had there was a student from university who came to a placement for her course. And I know she was finding things really very difficult in terms of the course and the hours, etc. I know she had that sort of sense of anxiety, terms of getting it right and going through all the textbooks. And even with PCP, well, I now need to do grids. I now need to do laddering. I now need to do pyramiding. And it was almost in the sense that that was shrouding her from engaging with the individual and their narrative. And it was almost, it was almost a eureka moment where we spoke about the whole thing of anxiety and trying to anticipate whether she could manage that to actually engage with that individual's narrative and then bring that, the other more formalized sort of theoretical parts or techniques in behind that once she'd actually engaged with the client. And there was just such a incredible change in her whole perspective to working with clients and doing actually ending up doing something really useful with the clients she was working with. That was clearly helpful for them. Yeah.
Yeah, so in terms of people coming to PCP who might be, you know, just beginning their PCP study or, you know, learning, most people will be learning for themselves these days. So are there particular things that you think might be useful for them to either look at or to know about?
Well, I would say, and I keep coming back to it sort of, over the years, really. I mean, the work of Miller Mayer, I adore it. It's, I mean, it's feeling emotional, actually. I just think the way he articulates himself, and he very much talks about narrative.
Yeah.
And he talks about that whole sense of how we're part of our time and place.
Yeah.
And that sense of almost from one generation to another, we cannot help but have some of that way of construing that is then part of us and how that then goes on into the future as well. And there's something really sensitive about the way he writes, the way he sees individuals construct worlds. And for me, that just so fits with social work because it is about people's family, people's culture, people's lived experiences.
Yeah.
That's, you know, this whole thing about working with difference, we're always working with difference.
Yeah.
And for me, PCP really underlines that. It's like, it doesn't matter what person's sitting in front of you. And even if you think they're similar to you, they look similar to me, they're from a similar culture, they're probably not, because actually their narrative, by a definition, by a constructivist definition, has to be completely different. And it's about being able to engage with that. And I suppose it's about asking those inquiring questions to elaborate that construct world, which you actually know nothing of. And I love the humility of PCP, where actually we cannot ever know what it is to stand in someone's shoes until we've asked them. And even then, we can't really know, but we can get closer to it if we dare to have that dialogue with them and develop that rapport with them. So definitely the work of Miller Mayer. I mean Peggy Dalton and her book A Psychology for Living, but I mean I've got a real affection for Peggy. I think most people who knew her
love
Peggy,
and I love that book. I think it's accessible, isn't it?
Oh, so accessible. So that's by Peggy Dalton and Gavin Dunnett. Really good book, and it just makes PCP so accessible. I mean, Peggy was a speech and language therapist, but it doesn't matter what profession you are, it's just about using or just tapping into people's narratives. But certainly Miller Mayer I find really useful. I find this is a tool, I guess, but it's the idea of self-characterization I find really useful. So whilst PCP talks about very much about elaborating the complaint, there's also something about self-characterization is about, well, if life wasn't with that complaint, what could life possibly look like? And there's that sense of a self-characterization just allows the client and the therapist to articulate a possible world that the client might dare to step in or might choose not to step in, but they're making an active choice with that. There's something about the movement that a self-characterization sort of stimulates really in terms of construing ourselves as, as if we didn't have that issue, or or trying to even plot a course out of the hole that we might feel like we're in. Yeah. It's just a way of doing that really quite succinctly, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I find, you know, the flexibility of PCP, and that's really what you've been talking about, isn't it? That, you know, you can use different things from PCP at different moments in different roles that you'll have. Absolutely. And it will work.
Absolutely. I mean, I must say, I have nothing against CBT. I think CBT is great. If it works for an individual, then absolutely they should be doing it. But I think it's very clear when someone's doing CBT, and maybe because it's underpinned by a particular approaches that will be used, very clear formulations. Whereas if you ask a PCP practitioner, well, what does PCP look like? How do I know if I'm watching what you're doing that it's PCP? And I guess in a difficult way, I don't have an answer for that, because it's really hard to say, well, actually, now they're doing PCP. Yeah. I mean, you could be doing laddering, but doesn't mean I don't think that means you're doing PCP. And I think it's right back once again to those very fundamental principles in terms of constructive alternativism, and that you're working with that individual's construct world, and you're suspending as much as you can your own way of construing, other than viewing them through the professional constructs. And I guess that's PCP. But then after you once said that, it's so broad in terms of how you might go about it. And I know one therapist will be so different to another in terms of their approach, but still it will be PCP.
Yes, yeah. And I think sometimes it can almost look like you aren't doing anything, because it's not obvious to the client, hopefully, or to the, if you're doing supervision, what approach you're using.
Yeah.
What you're trying to have is a conversation and a discussion that makes sense and moves sensibly from thing to thing, rather than jumps around.
Yeah. So, absolutely. So I think that whole notion of experimenting in PCP, I think if someone was on the outside looking in, they would think, what on earth are you doing?
Yeah.
Because what I really like about PCP, and where it does differ from CBT, it's not there. You don't have a bag of tools. And so it's about being able to sit in the therapist's chair and allowing the client to sit in their position and working with what comes out. And it's quite organic in that sense.
Yeah.
And then it's from that you start to, with the client, design the experiments that may allow them to reconstrue or try different constructs on for size. But the experiments themselves can look almost bizarre, I think. I mean, I can remember one person I was working with, his experiments was to buy particular Airfix models and make them and go to the Imperial War Museum. And it's like, why would you do that? But actually for him, I mean, I won't go into the details, but for him, most difficult thing in the world, because what it meant for him in terms of doing something he was interested in, taking time for himself, and believing that he could develop an interest, was just so threatening. And he was finding something that he could potentially do, that he could experiment with. So I just think that's really fascinating in terms of how clients and therapists may experiment with trying on new constructs.
Yes, yeah. And those experiments have to be their experiments.
Absolutely.
That's maybe the difference between CBT, you know, one of the things that CBT will have is a range of potential experiments. So if you're washing your hands too much, you know, you have to try not to and see what that's like, etc. Yeah. But we might work out a completely different kind of experiment that still addresses the issue.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the client has to own the experiment more than the therapist. And the client has to see more sense in the experiment than the therapist. Well, so I guess as a therapist, you want to say it's altruistic, but it's not, because we have our own needs as well. And actually, when you see a client that starts to move with their experiment and then brings back other experiments. I had one client recently who was, I think by Dropbox, sending me the artwork she was doing. We never spoke about her doing artwork, but she was drawing constructs of her before, her how she'd like to be.
Yeah.
I mean, some really significant trauma in the past that she'd had, but how she was literally daring to draw a painting of what her life would be if she didn't have, or if she wasn't sort of bound by those constructs from the past, and what she would, how life might be if she was to sort of allow herself to reconstrue whilst not forgetting her past, her childhood, who she was as a child, and trying to deny that person. It was about her developing compassion towards herself when she was younger, and forgiveness, I suppose, from her perspective. But to see those represented in pictures, we never spoke about that, but those were her experiments on top of the experiments we'd already talked about. Was an incredible thing, really, and was the end of therapy in a sense, because it's and I think there's that sense, which doesn't always happen, where the client starts to tell you the theory back to you from their perspective, and that's when I know perhaps we've gone as far as we can go, because you now own a process of change. It's not me that's trying to facilitate that, and that's where we stop, because actually you've got a lifetime to experiment in, and I need to come out of that picture.
Oh, that's an interesting way to explain that. That's very helpful. So if people are thinking they might like a PCP supervisor, can they contact you? I can put your website details in there.
Of course, absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, do they need to be a social worker?
No. So I see social workers, psychologists, speech and language therapists. I'll work with anyone. I mean, I think it's really, really important that there's that initial experience in terms of mental health and professional qualification. But I'd be very happy to work with anyone in terms of sort of working with a personal construct perspective and how they might work that into their practice.
Yeah. Okay. That's helpful then. So I can put your website information on the show notes.
Absolutely.
So people can get in touch if they're interested.
Yes.
And if they are a social worker and they're thinking, okay, I'd like to extend my PCP knowledge, is there anything available specifically for social workers, anything they could do? Or maybe they get in touch with you.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to say there is all these things you can access. I know the PCPA, the Personal Construct Psychology Association, is looking at providing the training courses. But I think, PCP, it shouldn't be, but it's just always feels quite niche. I think the starting point really are to familiarize oneself with some of the texts in terms of Psychology for Living.
Yeah.
Inquiring Men by Faye Francella is a great one as well. There's obviously Kelly's volumes and David Winter's tome, which are it's all great stuff. But I think to start off, maybe sort of Peggy's book is a good one, and Faye Francella's. And I suppose engaging with supervision.
Yeah.
And I suppose thinking about how that individual can sort of demonstrate their own experiential learning with PCP, because, like I was saying earlier on, it's all very well reading it in various sort of academic and textbooks, but actually true PCP is as it is for a client, the same as for us. It's got to be experiential.
Yeah.
And that's the only way we're going to make sense of it.
And
that doesn't mean throwing away the books, but that the books are in parallel, but it's our experience and it's ourselves daring to engage much more in the theory and thinking about how that might look in practice.
Yeah.
That I suppose becomes PCP.
Yeah, okay. That's extremely helpful.
All right, good.
Really useful to people who are social workers in particular, but I think it will be very interesting for people who aren't, who don't know about this kind of role that people can take with people and also how to use PCP in it.
Yes. No, and I think, again, being one, I can say this. I think social work is always, it's certainly in multidisciplinary teams, is always we're always the poor relation. I know I'm generalizing, but it's almost like we're not confident enough as a profession to sort of pin our colors to the mast and say this is why we're taking this particular perspective.
Yeah.
I think it's really important that the social workers of any generation, and I know I'm a particular generation, social workers of any generation are able to be, I guess, fairly forthright, really, in their views, but not that it comes from the gut. I always get a bit concerned when people say, "Well, it's a gut feeling." Actually, it should come from somewhere, and you should be able to qualify where it comes from and how you formulated that position, and why you're taking that particular line and that particular path. And social work, like any profession, is not exempt from that. A PCP practitioner is not exempt from that.
Yeah,
And I think social work generally, it's just really important that they're able to, whereas a profession, we're able to account for ourselves fully in terms of what we do. And showcase is too much of egotist, being too much egotistical, but being able to sort of demonstrate what we consider is good practice, and being confident in that in terms of putting that out there.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much indeed. So that's been fantastic. Very, very helpful.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Ian.
Thank you for asking me.
I hope that was interesting for you. I think what Ian demonstrates is the importance of linking back into the theory. And that's another thing that I'm trying to do with the podcast, is to present little snippets of the theory so that people can gradually get used to some of the terms, and also hear about some of the ways that people use PCP that's reported in research. So next month's podcast will be a look at a paper or a chapter. And remember to have a look at the Coventry Constructivist Centre's study days, because there's one coming up which is about a community of selves. If you're interested in that, that'd be a really useful one to attend. And we've got the programme out now for the rest of the year. So if you go to the website, which is covpcp.com, you will find the details on there of all the study days. And at the moment, they're all on Zoom, so hopefully that makes it very accessible for people. And I'll see you next month. Thanks. Bye.